Lullabies were probably some of the first songs. The act of soothing a baby offers us all the evidence we need of the power of music. Lullabies come straight from the heart, and the kind of pure communication they represent is at the heart of the Lullaby Project, which gives parents and caregivers the opportunity to write and record a song for a child. It's coming to the Leeward Theater in the form of a concert where those lullabies will be performed by professional singers and by a Leeward choir. John Senior is putting the project together. He's with us this morning.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, John. This is a wonderful project for a lot of reasons. How did you hear about it?
I was approached by Camille de Moville, who's Leeward Theater's manager, and Carnegie Hall is actually the organization that is running this program nationwide. So this is the sixth year. Mm-hmm. Carnegie Hall started this with two musicians in 2011, and it's growing across the country. So this is Hawaii's first year that we're participating. So I went to New York in November for workshops with musicians all across the country, and that's how that began. My process began.
So the process of creating this concert that's coming up starts with somebody who may or may not be a professional musician creating a song. Most of them are not professional musicians,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. These are not musicians. And so we partner, each mom or dad is partnered with a musician who facilitates or helps present ideas so that they can come up with their original lullaby for their baby. And in some cases, some of the moms are pregnant, so they haven't given birth yet.
So it starts with maybe some lyrics or a little fragment of melody.
Exactly. There's Carnegie Hall provides a lot of materials to help the process. So there's parents can write a letter to their baby. They're trying to think of why they gave their baby a certain name. Mm-hmm. They think about their baby as a young adult and what their wishes or hopes for their child would be, et cetera. So that kind of helps to pull out
I would think it would help a lot, John,
sure.
as triggers to a song. Yeah,
yeah. And each parent and each song is so different. Yeah.
Well, as you well know, the process of starting a song from scratch can be a daunting one, right? It's like, what do I start with?
Yeah, sure.
You know, do I start with a little melody or a fragment of lyrics? But very few songwriters, even professional songwriters, have a song emerge whole cloth. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And this had to come immediately. We had an afternoon workshop. We had two workshops. So these parents are writing songs on the spot, but I think the thing that connects all the songs is the idea of inspiration. Mm-hmm. And the stories, the powerful emotions that are coming out of the workshops, all of a sudden the songs just are there. It's an amazing process, and each parent has a different musician, so I think for each parent the process is different as well.
One of these has been recorded already, and we heard just a fragment of it before we started our interview, but let's play a little bit of a fragment.
Sure.
Sweetest dreams, dear Madeline, I'll read you a book. Good night. I love you so much, sweet Madeline.
Well, right away, John, that defies my stereotype of a lullaby because it didn't put me to sleep, right? It's you know, rhythmic and alive, obviously a reggae
sure.
tune in that case, but also a lullaby at the same time.
Sure.
So they go all over the place stylistically, these songs.
They do. Each song is really unique into itself, and a lot of it is that the parent is really coming from their musical perspective. What did they like to listen to? What did they like singing to their babies? And In this case, that particular song, Madeline's Lullaby, it's coming from Cincinnati, Ohio. We're partnering with a group there called My Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually written by a classroom of orchestra students who are ages 4 to 6. And
wow.
So they created a lullaby. We're sending them one of our lullabies to record and perform. So
Those lyrics came from young kids?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And in our lullaby project, we'll have one of our students also singing a song he composed for his mother. So this reverse situation happens where a child is now singing for the parent.
You know, that speaks to something, a phenomenon that I see all the time through this radio show, is that people have a lot more creativity in them than they realize,
mm-hmm.
particularly when they're young.
Absolutely.
You almost have to have it beaten out of you, in a sense, right?
And it just dawned on me that I think sometimes because the songs are coming so fast and from such inspiration that sometimes we can get caught up in that fact, but these parents were just, the song was there.
Yeah.
Came out. And so it's really fun from that perspective to see that we're all composers, whether we know it or not.
It's, right. And you tapped into a very reliable font of inspiration, because if you can't be inspired by your child, chances are you can't be inspired by much of anything, right?
It was beautiful. It is beautiful. It's beautiful to see the songs coming, to see my students arranging them, to hear them, to rehearse them. It's really special.
With the parent originators, I'm sure at first you ran into all kinds of reluctance. Oh, I'm not a singer. I'm not a musician. How do you help them get over that?
You know, as a teacher, I come across my students say that often. And, you know, I think once you realize that that's just something that's not true, we're all singers. We all to start doing it, all of a sudden you realize, oh, I can. And the idea is that you're not just singing this one song to your baby. You're just going to keep creating other lullabies as well.
Yeah, let's hope it really opens up something in the people who take part, John. It's a wonderful project.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for coming in.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
John Signor is the project manager for the Lullaby Project, which will be performed Saturday, April 2nd at the Leeward Theater on the campus of Leeward Community College. Lullabies will be performed by Leeward Community College's Hawaiian Ensemble and guest vocalist Naeha Breland, Nara Cardenas, Annalise Esopenko, Star Kalahiki, Christian Lay, and Sharon Myung.
Smile, darling child, no need to fear. If the wind blows, your loved ones are near. If the bough breaks, we'll all learn to fly. We'll journey together in a lullaby.
Who's man in Havana? The president who wants to close Gitmo goes to the other end of the island to open up Cuba. Obama, U.S.-Cuban baseball, and footsteps of history that go way back before the Cold War. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
This morning at 9, right after The Conversation.
More and more station members are choosing continuous monthly giving as their preferred way to financially support Hawaii Public Radio and its work. Mahalo to Ann Tokoro of Honolulu, Barbara and Francis Hasegawa of IAEA, and Mary O'Brien Ichikawa of Honolulu for their sustaining memberships. Sustaining membership is steadily lowering the amount of day-to-day operating support needed to be raised over the air. To become a sustaining member at the $10 a month level, call us at 955-8821 during business hours or go to hawaiipublicradio.org. And thanks.
Support for today's programming comes from Maui Arts and Cultural Center, presenting vocalist Lisa Fisher and her band Grand Baton, 7:30 p.m. this Thursday in Castle Theater. Tickets at mauiarts.org.
Rarely do presidential candidates come to campaign in Hawaii. More often we see them elsewhere or just in political ads. This time around, that's true too, though this weekend, Jane Sanders came to Hawaii to help Hawaii feel the burn. Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair has a reality check. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann.
Okay, so we didn't get a visit from Bernie, but he sent his best emissary, who made a couple of public appearances yesterday, obviously meant to inspire the party faithful or those who are certainly the supporters of Bernie Sanders. But what was her essential message about the chances for success of this campaign?
Well, you know, first of all, in many ways, Jane Sanders has become nearly as famous as her husband. She's a bit of a personality on her own at her husband's side throughout the campaign, and she took time to fly from Arizona, because there's a primary there tomorrow, to spend 2 days here. And she effectively said it's not over yet, even though it seems like it's a little bit disconcerting that the delegate count is going Hillary Clinton's way by a pretty large margin, actually. She said that we think we can still do it. They've actually done the math. Most of the primaries that are left are in western states. And I mentioned Arizona. I think it's also Idaho and Utah. Remember, you have California coming up and New York and Wisconsin. She thinks, she said as much, that by June 7th, when California votes, she feels that they will prevent Hillary from getting the nomination, the delegate count necessary to go to the convention. So we'll see. But she certainly, the supporters that showed up, about 400 yesterday at the Church at Crossroads alone, feel that they have a candidate that can win.
And clearly that was good news for them to hear her say that even if she's done the math or they've done the math, that there may be the rocky road, but a road that they can travel. The other appearance that she made was with veterans. Why did she single out veterans?
I think it had a lot to do with Tulsi Gabbard, who very prominently has endorsed the campaign, who has been actually campaigning for Bernie Sanders in a number of mainland locations. She was there yesterday. Of course, she is our U.S. Congresswoman, 2nd District. She is a veteran, as we all know. And she and Jane Sanders took questions, heard how things are going, concerns about suicide in the ranks, concerns that the Veterans Administration not moving fast enough, any number of concerns. Sanders also said that her husband had taken veterans' issue and made them a priority and cited his service in Congress to that effect. As she seemed quite sincere. It didn't seem like it was lip service in any way. Clearly concerned, as Tulsi put it, the biggest thing Bernie Sanders can do is make sure we don't get into another war unless it's one that is absolutely necessary. And that's a campaign position that that many people in Hawaii find very appealing.
And that idea of unless absolutely necessary is obviously really subjective depending upon who you talk to. But at least at this point, because isn't she leaving today to go and be back in Arizona for...
Actually, they'll be in California, she told me, tonight, for tomorrow night, Tuesday night, for the election returns coming in. And a reminder, that's the other thing. She was here to remind everybody, Democrats, vote on Saturday. There is a presidential preference poll. By the way, you can read about that on our website. We got all the precinct locations posted.
All right. We're going to leave it there. Thanks so much, Chad. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Beth Ann. Bye.
Chad Blair reports for Civil Beat.
Good morning. I'm Chris Vandercook. It's 8:30, and you're tuned to The Conversation on statewide, member-supported HPR2, Hawaii Public Radio. You can talk back about what you hear on the show to our talkback line at 808-792-8217. Find us on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation, on Twitter at HI Conversation, or at BKOZHPR. You also can email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Coming up later, learning the ways of the master chef after the news from Deutsche Welle.